Rescue for Workers is a program dedicated to exposing exploitation and helping workers who are mistreated, abused, underpaid and facing injustice in their workplace.
Kia ora, welcome to the One Union Show, a show dedicated to telling real workers' stories and winning justice. I'm your host, Izzy Kane, and we have a pretty informative show for you today. Myself and our other host, National Secretary of One Union, Matt McCartan, will be having discussions about some cases of exploitation that One Union is representing for workers at the moment. Later on, discussing the topic of defamation and free speech. And yes, there will be songs. A bit of an outcry from listeners last week when I skipped our Song of Struggle, so fear not, I won't be doing that again. So do stick around to hear what progressive music I have picked out for you today. So that's coming up later on in the show. But first, kia ora, Matt.
Kia ora, Izzy.
So we thought we'd start the show off today by talking about a case we've had with One Union for a little while. So this is a case about fundraising. So you know when you go into the mall, our listeners will all be familiar with this, when you walk into a mall and there are people standing around with buckets, foundations, and they just ask you for donations, basically. So there's a bit of an issue here about it's contractual, isn't it, Matt? So
yes,
talk to us a little bit about that.
I wanted to raise it today with you because I think there's some lessons that you can take away with us. So what I think is interesting about this, it's that even employees don't know the difference in what their regulations are around commission salespeople. So just for those who think they might are on commission, you cannot get paid less than the minimum wage ever, even though you're on commission. So, for example, if your commission in a week is, say, $500, but you work for 40 hours, you must be paid the minimum wage as a minimum, which would be then 40 hours at $20 would then be $800 a week. And if your commission was $500, then they have to top it up to the
$800.
A lot of people on commission don't know that, but even a lot of employers don't know that. And they say, oh, you're a contractor. Well, no, you're not. You're a casual employee. Because,
well, yeah, if that was the case, wouldn't a lot of exploiters take advantage of that sort of approach?
Well, they don't need that to take, to exploit. But
don't give any ideas.
But this would be, I don't think that even some employees understand that.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so it's not deliberate. That's just careless.
Right.
So a lot of people, particularly if you go into the malls, you'll see people in there. They tend to be, not so much now, but they tend to be foreign, sort of non-New Zealanders. A lot of them are backpacking around and they get these contract jobs. So what they do is they say, we'll give you a commission. So sometimes, depending on the commission, is like 30%. So when they come in, you make a pledge, say, oh, yes, I'll pledge to the ABC Foundation, I'll give you $20 a month or whatever. They get paid a commission on that. But the law is they must also not get less than the minimum wage.
Right.
And this is the problem we have with this case. This was a young German woman who was working on that arrangement, and then she wasn't paid. And then they don't keep the hours. Right.
Ah.
So if you're on commission, keep a notebook of your hours, right? Because it's the hourly rate. You can't get paid less than that. You can get paid more, but not less. And so that's where the trouble begins. So in this employer, they then didn't keep the hours. She kept the hours, and then they were only paying a commission, even though that, you know, is what I said, it's an hourly rate. But in this case, it wasn't careless. They knew, because it was in her contract. It was in her contract. So even though they were telling her that she was a commission salesperson, her contract had her down as a casual employee. And
right.
There's a difference between a contractor and an employee, and quite rightly, her contract was right. But they weren't thinking, they were hoping that because she was not familiar with New Zealand law, that she wouldn't pay attention. So I think what would be useful to listeners to take away, it's that if they've ever been given a commission job or know someone who's been commissioned a job, keep your hours and understand the minimum wage is $20. So that you can never get paid less than that. And that's what this case is about. And eventually they've got themselves a lawyer, thank goodness, who knows at least the rules.
Yeah.
And so we will resolve this without going to court.
But wasn't there also a bit of a development there, Matt, with how the employer then dealt with us when we started to represent
the worker? I've been a bit conflicted about this.
Yeah.
And this is also a lesson, I think, for people who are listening to the show. It's that the employer has got a salary job in a corporation and was doing the work of her business of managing these salespeople from her day job.
Right.
And was using her employer's emails, and it was just astonishing, would use, and at the bottom of all her emails was her employer's, you know, footer, you know, all the details and, you know, logos and stuff. And I think you don't need to be told, right? If you're operating a business from your employer's site, you're going to be in deep, deep doo-doo, right? Because it comes down to what they call a master-servant relationship or employment, your obligations as an employee. When your employer is employing you by the hour, you're required to be fully engaged in the work of that employer.
Makes sense.
And doing a little side gig will get you sacked.
Particularly when it's to do with, we're involved, it's a personal grievance.
Oh, well, that's just so astonishing. That's right. It's just almost like the arrogance.
Yeah.
Because I wrote to her and I said, what is your relationship with this corporate? Knowing the answer. And she writes, oh, nothing. And I said, you are operating this business from your employer's thing. This puts you at risk. I'm kind of giving her a warning.
Yeah, it's like a heads up.
Do you understand where I'm going with this? And she goes, no, I'm entitled to use it.
Right.
You know, I've got permission. And I thought, well, see, this is arrogance now, because common sense tells you this. But also, if you work from your employer's business, running another operation in their time and using their equipment, you will get the sack. And there will be no way that you can keep your job. Right? So let me just, I'm giving you very straight, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Now, what she thinks, so what she did is she wrote to me and wrote back and said, no, we have permission. What she misunderstands, that as a worker, you're allowed to use your employer's email and stuff like that, you know, for personal messages, right? You're sending out, say, hey, look, I'll meet you up for lunch or something, you know. That's what they mean by that, right? Or pick the kids up from school, you're sending emails and things. That's acceptable, a reasonable use of emails to do that stuff like that, but not run a business. And so what particularly annoyed me about it was that kind of explains the arrogance. She just wouldn't accept that she had to pay this worker and just kept lying to us, but in an arrogant way, not in a covert way, but in this kind of, you prove it.
Right.
And so I gave the employer a call, her employer, a call yesterday. And I said to them, look, what's the policy in there? Of course, I know clearly what it is. Now, I haven't put her in because I'm a bit conflicted. I never like having someone sacked, right?
Yeah.
But it's only because her lawyer also wrote to me claiming it was acceptable. And I had a confidential, what do they call it, without prejudice discussion with the lawyer on the phone. And I said, listen, your client will get the sack if I take this case, because I have to produce the evidence. And then her claim is that she was allowed to do it, right? And she isn't. I know that. And he went, no, I know, I understand. Oh, yeah, no, I saw that. You know, I don't know what she was thinking, right?
Yeah.
Then he wrote to me on her behalf saying she had permission. And I just thought, well, now you're stupid, because now you force my hand. So I've contacted him, but of course they want the name and they want all the details and this person get the sack. But I think the broader lesson sort of it is that people need to know that they're allowed to do reasonable personal emails, you know, if they're allowed to, you know, because most employers they do, right? It's in your contract as well, but you can't do this.
Yeah, well, we're not trying to get the person sacked. We just want them to settle.
Well, that justice, right?
Yeah.
And so what I want to do is, I've always taken the viewers, right? This was a case that came to us through the Citizen Advice Bureau. It was a small case. It was only owed about $1,400. So it wasn't big in our world, you know, in the amount of exploitation. It wasn't big. Small business. People just careless. Sort it out. Pay the money. No. So, you know, unravelling it goes on, and in the end it's going to cost them thousands and thousands because they've employed a lawyer. So once they employed a lawyer and fixed it and said, well, so I wrote and said, okay, up to now I've been paid to do it for nothing. Yeah, because it's a small case, small business, let it go. So I said, well, the clock is on now, so you're going to be paying my costs.
Would have been
so
cheaper to just...
$1,400 could have walked away.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we owe the money. There's no doubt that she owes the money. You know, there's no doubt. And just pay the money and move on. And it's not like they come from a pretty wealthy family, so it's not like, you know, look, we just don't have the money.
Mm.
It was like,
well, they've just employed a lawyer. They've just come, so they must have some money.
Yeah, because they're just looking. So then I unravelled some other things which go to the character, so that they applied for COVID money for this worker claiming she was a full-time and then kept the money. Exactly.
Oh,
so it's coming down to the more I dig, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
And
as often happens,
she could have fixed up. You know, the $1,400 they owed. Well, they claimed the COVID money. That's $580 a week, and they claimed for the 2 weeks. So it was a period going back a little while now. But that's $1,160 right there. So if they'd kind of got smart and self-preserving, they could have just put $300 on top of it and then just paid it. But you know, they couldn't help themselves. So now it's going to cost them thousands.
It'll be interesting to see where this one goes.
Well, if they don't resolve it, you know, there's a potential she loses her job. She gets prosecuted by the state for making a fraudulent claim for the COVID money, because that's supposed to go to the worker. The boss is not supposed to keep it, because they changed the rules. In the first one, it was okay, but they were allowed to keep it, but not the second. So they've applied for it and then kept the money and not given it to the worker who was affected. That's fraud. So, you know, like, and I keep trying to warn them, say, you don't want to come down this path with me. No. For the listeners, it's black humour in some sense. You kind of give these people a chance. They're endlessly trying to spell it out to them, you know. And I wasn't going to charge any fee, just, you know, it's small business. I don't want to hurt people. But I think this one is going to end in tears, unfortunately. I wrote to them last night one final thing. Said, spelled it all out for them in very, almost drawn-true pictures. Do you understand where this goes? But after today, you know, I'm going to sue them big time. And what it'll be is I'll put them out of business. I mean, that's the reality of it. But that's their choice. Because we are committed to justice and we will never stop. I won't stop. I will keep going. That's why, when I get into a fight, when we get in a fight with people, they don't believe you. They think because they deal with lawyers, unless they're getting paid, they don't fight. That we're from a different group. We are about what is right, and we will keep going.
Well, they should listen to the One Union show. They get a better idea.
If you got a case, and look, I had someone just a little different. Is he just on there? I had someone come and saw me this week. If we can, I always say, look, one, if we can help you, we will, but we won't say we can help you if we can't. This was a manager, high-paid job, six-figure job, so we wouldn't normally deal with cases like this, but worked for a company in a high position and had set up this... Oh, actually, it's very similar. Had set up his own company alongside his employer, hadn't told his employer that he'd set up a company, dealing with the employer's customers. As a consultant, and not directly in competition, but had gone because of the personal relationships they had with the employer's customers, was doing consultancy work for customers about how to improve their business. But at the same time, he was in charge of buying the services and goods from those customers for the employer. So there's now that is what they call a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And this is where the boss of this contract company is going to be a problem. It's called the conflict of interest, you know. And that if you've got anything, you'll find it in all your contracts, right, of your employment agreements. You will have in there a thing about the conflicts of interest. You must declare them. So this person has set a company up. And then a couple of months later, he put it into his wife's name. So that shows a certain potential cover-up.
Yeah.
You know, that you were hiding the fact. And he didn't declare it to the employer. The employer found out about it, and this is another instructive thing. Because he was a white-collar worker, they'd had a complaint or come to some reason or something. They investigated, but because all the stuff was all on the company computer, they were, by law, were able to access all his emails and his bank account of his company, and so he got the sack. Then come to see me. But that was the thing I looked at. I spent an hour or so with him, went through it and said, and lawyers have been saying to him, we can help you, oh, this is a great case and all this. And I said, I can't see it. What are the lawyers actually saying? Oh, well, you know, they said they'll take 40% of anything that we get. Okay. And I've got to pay them $4,000 up front. I said, well, of course they're saying we'll do a good case for you. Because just for the listeners, this is what these no-win, no-fee lawyers do, right? They go, we'll do it. Oh, yes, it's great. We'll get you thousands. Sign here. And then some of them will charge you $400. In this case, it's $4,000, and then 40%. They tell you a good song. Then they go to the boss. And we've come across this
before. Yes, we have.
Say, we'll get you $50,000. And then they go to the boss and say, give us 10 grand and we'll go away.
Mm.
Right? Then they go back to the worker and say, look, I can only get you 10 because, you know, you didn't tell me the full story. I blame the worker. The worker then goes, oh, I don't want to do it. Well, in the fine print, you'll see in your contract, it says, if you don't accept my advice, then you will pay for the time of what I put into the case, and here's the bill for that, which is $2,500 or something, right? Mm. So the work has been trapped, and this is what goes on all the time. So I've looked at the work, and I'll get back to them today, that we can't help, you know?
Mm.
And so I'm always very clear is that we won't tell someone they've got a case if they haven't got one. And 90% of the times they do have cases, but... we're not in the game of making money. We're in the game of getting justice for people.
Unlike those lawyers we just mentioned.
Well, they need to send their kids to private schools and buy their yachts and go off to the races and live the high life. And so they want someone to pay for it. But I just say for listeners, just be aware when you go to these lawyers, they want you to pay money. I mean, they've got a living to make. They've got a mortgage to pay. I understand they've got to make a living. But what they do is they oversell it.
Mm. It becomes truly heartbreaking when it's the cases of people who just have nothing.
Well, the amount of people, indeed, and the amount of people who come and see us after they've been through this, and I just look at their contracts with the lawyers and that, you see, and it's just, it is heartbreaking. And so, you know, we always want to do proper assessment first, and if I'm unsure, I'll get second opinions from some senior legal minds around Auckland here. And we always take the position as we want to help.
Yep.
But we'll maybe one out of about 20 cases actually we won't take on because we say, look, you're not going to win this, you know, and the reason's why.
But just circling back for a moment there, Matt, to do with the worker who is setting up a business, isn't that also something to do with what we call restraint of trade?
Yes, a good point.
Yeah.
And if listeners read their contracts, they'll see it and it slipped in there, but people don't really know what it means.
Mm.
Right? And what employees do is to protect their business. And they use it too widely. They sacked him because he had a conflict of having a company and didn't disclose it. It's what they call a breakdown of trust and confidence, which they can stand on. What he tried to do, though, is then go out to try and get a job with another supplier, a competitor, and they wrote to the worker as well as to the company and said what they call a cease and desist letter. You are not entitled to employ him because he's going to compete against us under the restraint of trade. And because he was a high-powered employee, so he was what we call procurement, he had quite a skill. And that he went to his employer's competitors and offered his services, so they were all good, and they used the restraint of trade. And what that meant is that because he'd learned the knowledge from the company, he would go and work for a competitor.
Yeah.
And then he would deal with that employer, his former employer's customers, and obviously take them away from that employer. So that's what they call a restraint of trade. And therefore, the other employer wouldn't take them on. They rescinded their offer. So that was obviously very distressing to the worker because now he can't work in that business.
Yeah.
But that's a time constraint. Now, what they call a restraint, so most clauses they have it is for 3 months.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
So it stops you from walking out the door to go to the competitor and offering your job, and you know all about how the company works and you can put them out of business or do well. So that's that. But a lot of people will find in their contract, some employers, I saw another one yesterday, which had for a truck driver, said you can't restrain your trade and you can't work for any driving in Auckland for 2 years. Now, that's nonsense.
Is this just driving?
Just driving.
Okay.
So some employers, they take that restraint of trade, which is supposed to be in cases like this, a senior manager who's in the sales.
Going
to their customers and getting them to, okay, that's the restraint of trade. What a lot of employers do is they're using it as the broadest way possible. And just so the listeners know, they can't do that.
No,
you have a right to make a living.
Yeah. So it's just, it would trap the worker and...
Exactly.
And it's just a ploy to stop their own competitors at the expense of the workers.
Exactly. And what it does is forces a union, a worker to stay in a very low-paid job and be exploited. Because they say, oh, you can't go and get another job. So just as a sum up, as a worker, if you're a, well, it makes sense. If you think about it as a cleaner, what? I can't go and clean at another site because it was a restraint of trade. Break, right? So if you take that as the extreme, that applies to almost every job. So this is what I'd encourage people to do. I don't want you to be pessimistic because, you know, we take on any case we think you can win, right? But all I want to do is in a case like that where you set up a business, and the same with this employer we're dealing with, if you're doing business in the employer's time, you've got almost zero chance of keeping your job. Right. So when you come and say, well, I was running a business at work and then I got caught and then I got sacked, I mean, I'm going to be pushing it uphill. It's not impossible, but pretty much. But what we do is you can go to our website, www.oneunion, and that's...
oneunion.org.nz.
All right, and that's one word. And if you go to our website, on the website, it has what you'll see a button called Case Assessment. And what it is, you press onto that and put in your details of your case and your details, and then it comes to me. I have a look, and I'll get back to you within a day, and that's when we do an assessment.
Yeah.
It'd be quick. Within a day, we all know how strong your case is and what the likely sort of outcome.
And the form is very easy and simple to fill out.
Can't be simple. And take about 5 minutes to fill it out, because we just want the basic things. We don't need you to do chapter and verse. It'll give me an idea, and then I'll talk to you on the phone or get you to come in and whatever, chat about it.
But alternatively, if our listeners aren't able to access a computer or have trouble with filling out forms like that, you can free phone us on 0800 368 000.
Yep. And I keep that phone on my desk.
Fully charged?
Mostly. Yes.
Okay, that was a lot to take in. So we'll be having a break from myself and Matt having a good old yarn now and play you some music. So we'll be talking about the unionisation of a work site that One Union has recently steered and also discussing the hot topics of defamation and free speech later on. For now, though, today's Song of Struggle, which... for new listeners, is a part of a segment where I explore songs from or representing progressive movements throughout history and learn a thing or two about the history behind them, and hopefully you do too. So today I'm going to be playing Midnight Oil's Beds Are Burning. What a classic tune, and such a powerful message from the Aussie band. It was released in 1988, and Midnight Oil, generally speaking, is a band well known for their socially progressive messages. They're particularly keen environmentalists, actually. The song is aimed, of course, at the awful treatment that the Indigenous Aboriginal people suffered from European settlers in Australia as a result, directly caused by, colonialism, really. Speaks for itself when the lyrics include, "It belongs to them, let's give it back." This song, though, I really like the flex where Midnight Oil released Beds Are Burning a few months before the bicentenary in Australia, marking the first fleet's arrival in Sydney 200 years before, because it was then the dominant song in the country at the time it was celebrating the very thing the song critiques. So interestingly, the line, "The time has come to say fair's fair," is particularly suggestive, I reckon, with "the time has come" playing on the "It's Time" slogan of the 1972 Labor government, who made some progress on Indigenous issues, and "to say fair's fair" playing on a notion that's also very familiar to us Kiwis, that of a fair go. The rest of the lyrics are deceptively simple, but packed with ideas and challenging messages, but I will let you decipher those for yourself. So here it is, the iconic Aussie tune from Midnight Oil, "Beds Are Burning."
Time has come. A fight's a fight. give it back.
Good tune. So that was Midnight Oil's Beds Are Burning.
So as regular listeners of our show will be aware, we do a lot of cases with individual workers. Predominantly we've done that so far. Mm-hmm. But Matt, we've actually started, One Union has gone into representing multiple workers or going into a work site now. Or at least we've started it.
That's right. I mean, we've been, most of our, as you quite rightly point out, is doing casework for people who've been exploited or abused or underpaid or mistreated.
As opposed to what people would normally think when they hear about a union. Because when you think union, you think collective agreements, worksites, and et cetera.
And we've started to do that now.
Right.
And that's certainly my background. But we're only, we'll look at doing sites where we think we can help people. And is not covered by another union.
So. Oh, of course.
So the latest example of that is 43 workers. They were going to make 10 redundant going through a process. There was no union. They didn't know quite what to do. And what they really want is assistance to do it. So that was a process which we appeared to help them with. We went through it. I think just having someone, in this case it was me, with some experience, it just helps the workers, but also helps the company. So anyway, we think we've sorted it out. So this week we will conclude the matters. But in the agreements, as everyone who's listening to knows, and you go and have a look at your agreement, you'll see it has redundancy, nothing, you know, zero, and you're agreeing to it. So you sign that, because you want the job, so you'll sign anything which is put in front of you. But what it will mean when it comes to redundancy, you're not entitled to anything. Now, they had that in the case, they said, look, just stop it, you know, we will engage on that basis. So what we've agreed to is they get 8 weeks of redundancy pay for the first year of service. Mm-hmm. And even those who work less than a year will get the 8 weeks. And in addition to that, they will get 2 weeks for every year of service.
Right.
In addition to that, we're agreeing is that voluntary redundancy happens first as a general thing, all being equal. And if they give them redundancy, they give a month's notice and they don't have to work their month. So I've got now all these workers all want to be made redundant because they're getting 12 weeks pay for working for less than a year and then 2 weeks for every year thereafter. So we might have been too successful because people are saying, can I have redundancy? Can I have redundancy? So I think they might land up with half the workforce are wanting to... to leave the company. But anyway, the point is that we take a view that a company has a right to restructure within reason, as long as they do it through good faith.
Yep.
But that means they have some obligations too. They can't just throw people out onto the street. So that's where we come in, and we're going to do more of that sort of work. But they now the workers want to have more of a, what you call a collective agreement.
Yep.
Which is a union agreement for all the workers on the site, their pay rates and their conditions and so on and so on. And that's where you improve things. That's what unions do as a, you know, as they're part of their mission, is to increase the wage and salary. So there's two parts of it, you know, is that as a union to improve the wages and the conditions of the workers, the members, and we also do that if you're in trouble, you need help as an individual, that you assist them and do that. So there's two parts to it, and we'll be doing more and more of that work as we go along.
And it's not so surprising that these workers
well, they needed some help and some guidance, and also for a union to be able to step in, because how many people are members of a union? How many workers in New Zealand are members of unions?
350,000, which might seem a lot when you think about it, but then you think in the private sector, only 7% of the workforce are in unions. That's the private sector. So when you say 350,000, well, you know, 250,000 are in the public sector.
Yep.
They're teachers and nurses, firefighters and nurses and cops and so on, right? So when you go out into the real world, where most of us are at, No, so 50% of the workforce now in the private sector cannot join a union.
50%,
because there is no union for them.
Right.
So what we've set up to do is the one union, right? And that's our mission, that we will help anybody if we can who needs help. The other unions, even if they cover a worksite, won't take a person's case up if they're not already a member. And obviously, if only 7% are, that means that 93% are not going to be helped. They've got to go to these lawyers and can't afford it. So this is where our mission is. And we say, look, we will help you if we can. And so that's our mission. And so people need help, go to our website.
Yep, www.oneunion.org.nz. That's oneunion.org.nz. You can read more about what we do. And you can also fill out, if you yourself need help, you can use our easy online case form. You can click on it, fill it out. It only takes a few minutes to do, and it goes straight through to Matt here. And we'll get back to you in about a day.
In 24 hours. I mean, I had someone who called, and just as their case assessment form come up, and she phoned immediately as she sent it through, and I picked up the phone and said, yeah, I'm just reading this form now. And she was so shocked. She said, what? I said, no, no, it just came up as you called. So, so it's not that I sit at my computer sort of looking for the things to come up.
Just waiting.
I just happened to be sort of typing at the time, and it flicked up, but it was a bit of a surprise to her. She goes, well, you did say you'd get back to us quick. Oh, my God. And which then segues in, and that was a case, funny enough, about which you and I were going to talk about is what we call a 90-day rule.
Right,
and this worker phoned up, and it was the 90-day rule.
Yeah.
And so this is someone who, she phoned up, she's been pulled into a performance meeting.
Right.
And that's not a disciplinary, but it's kind of a signal.
Yeah.
If you're in disciplinary, that means they're probably going to sack you. You need to get help. It's so far, cross wood, that we've been successful in having people not dismissed when that happens.
Yeah.
But we've got to get them before it happens. Once you're sacked, it's hard to fix it. But this is a case of a worker had issues with her employer, and the employer obviously thinks. So it was an easy discussion when I said, you know, she was pretty upset about her employer and angry. But what was it is that she'd worked there for less than 90 days.
Yeah.
The employer can dismiss someone within the 90 days pretty much without consequence, except they've now got to, under national, they didn't have to give any reason.
Yeah.
The Labour's amended it a bit and said, well, you've got to be shown is that you raise your concerns with them and you ask them to improve. When they say in your first 90 days that we need to talk about to improve your work, that's a signal, right? Is that they're going to do that and then they're going to get readier and then they're off the hook. So if they do that, there's legally can't do anything about it. So talk through about this, the advice, but people just need to know that in the 90-day rule is they can't sack you just because they feel like it. There have been cases in the past where on the 89th day they sent a text, oh, we've decided to sort of not to take you on. That doesn't work. They will get posture and win.
Did it work before Labor made the amendments?
Yes,
I thought that was the case.
It's one of the cases we got involved in. I won't name the company because I don't want to embarrass them now because we're all kissed and made up. But on the 89th day, the worker gets a text. They thought that they were doing well.
Mm.
And they get a text, oh, we're not going to have any more on the 89th day. So we went to war on that one.
Yeah.
And got the company to back off and compensate and, you know, say they wouldn't do it again.
It's just cruel.
But this happens all the time. And people then get trained not to cause a fuss, you know, because they keep their head down. That's how they kick at their jobs. And it's just bad. So I said to the workers, look, you can go there and it'll be fine. You know, you can stop it. But the question which I always ask everyone about these things, life is short. Do you want to be there? That's the question.
Right.
And she goes, no, I hate my boss. Okay. And how do they feel about you? Oh, they hate me too. Okay.
Right.
What do you like about a job? Not much. won't go. So let's be clear. So you're wanting us to come and help you to stop you from to fight back, but you don't really want to be there, and they really don't want you there either, right? So I just want you to reflect on that, right? Because what I want to do is not waste my time. You know? And so she thought about it and came back and said, oh, look, I don't want to be there. I'm going to quit. There's very few times that we get that, but
right.
I think that, you know, from the 90-day rule, you've got to be aware that if they approach you with an improvement, then that's probably the next step. So you can always contact us for advice.
We can free phone us, 0800-368-000.
Yeah, give me a call and I will tell you. I mean, my general thing, if you want to stay there, well, then obviously I'll help you to work it through, and so you can stay there and repair any, if there's any ill will, because that's important. Right?
So as our regular listeners will be aware, we've sometimes come across defamation claims from employers, and you might not be surprised, people listening, that that's happened to us. How many times has it happened to us now?
Five. So far.
Ah, I thought it was less. Okay, five. And apparently there was a new one this week.
Yeah. And look, they think it intimidates us. It doesn't intimidate us at all. You know, it's that what we've got in this country is that we seem to have rules that help the people who've got money. I know this comes as a great shock to everyone, as a not. Yeah. But what happens when we raise a case and we promote it on our website? Because we will only get change of stopping exploiters if it's public, you know?
Yes.
And this has been in the dark, in the shadows now. And a worker tries and tells their story, then they threaten to sue them.
Yeah.
And this is how they keep it quiet. We don't get intimidated by that sort of thing.
It's a matter of accountability.
Indeed. But also, I do have a working knowledge of defamation law. I wrote a column for the Herald for 10 years.
Oh, right.
And it was very political, and I would go right up against the wire. So I got a good experience with the Herald lawyers about what you're allowed to write.
Yeah.
Now, you would think that telling the truth would be a defence.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But the law is written in a way where very rich corporate lawyers can threaten to sue you. Here's what the trick is. They won't be successful. They threaten to sue you. You then got to go and get a lawyer yourself. And so people get intimidated, and it's costly, and lawyers want to get paid, and so they want, you know, $2,000 an hour or something until you run out of money. We don't go down that path. But it does raise the question about freedom of speech.
Right.
And this is what I think is a topic.
Hot topic.
So it's a very hot topic. People see it in political terms, you know, the right to criticise and the right to be able to have a view. It's turned into what they call a left-right fight, and it's wrong. You know, so it's seen as a more of a political fight, the freedom of speech. You know, if you look at what's happened in the States, right, they love talking about freedom, but at some point it goes from freedom of speech to hate speech. And that's where the conversation goes, you know. So I'm free to espouse racist views, or, you know, homophobic views, or anti-woman views, or whatever, you know. And so that's where the debate goes. But actually, it's broader than that. This is about the freedom to be able to talk about things which are true. You know, so defamation is when you know it not to be true and you do it anyway to damage or to someone else. That's fair. But what corporations and employers you use it for to shut people down completely, so they can say, we're saying it's not true, because that's the trick. They say, you're telling lies about us.
Right.
Then they sue, and the whole point, it might take about 2 years to get to the high court, and, you know, cost you $50,000 to defend it. So effectively it shuts you down.
Yeah, because you have to prove that what you're saying is true.
Right. Whereas I don't get into that. I go, it's all true.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to keep going. And they go, oh, you can't, you take it down. So that's how they start. And I just say, no, because I know it's true. And every time we write the articles and put it up on our website, we do get emails from more people who say, that's right.
Yes.
That happened to me.
Yes.
This person.
More work has come forward.
More work. Yeah. In fact, I got one just come overnight from this case in the small town we talked about.
Oh, another one.
Another worker who had been their manager from 2015. so long, 7 years ago, right? So we know this is going on, right? So that will help us. So partly why we publicise it, so that people will come forward.
Yeah.
One, to reinforce that what we're saying is true, mm-hmm. but two, we're getting justice for them as well.
And it's interesting that it doesn't seem to happen in isolation then.
Never.
That's the pattern we see.
If someone is exploiting someone, I can guarantee you it's not the first time. Okay, I can guarantee you. And so these are patterns. And this, for listeners, you can go back for 7 years on being diddled on the wages. You know, if you haven't been paid, you can go back for 7 years. And I'm happy to go back as far as that. What you can't do, you only have 90 days from if you were dismissed with what they call a personal grievance. If you look at a case of unfair treatment against the employer, we've had to register that within 90 days of that happening. But wage claims go back for 6 years. So,
so is it six, not seven?
Just to clarify that,
listeners.
And so we can go back and we're happy. Well, I'm happy to do that. Now, in terms of the freedom of speech, though, or free speech, is that I've done some interviews in other outlets in the last couple of weeks because I think it's an important topic. It's freedom of speech as a principle is what you should always have, right? But at the same time, you can't go and tell lies about somebody which is knowingly not true, so that's fine. What I'm very keen about, though, is that workers can tell their story without being threatened with being sued. And that's important because we know is what's happened is true. We know it hasn't gone to court, but we're not going to wait for 2 years to tell our story.
No.
You know, because our allegations, even though we know it's true, we can't say this is absolutely. What we have to say is we believe, we allege.
Mm. And we never take on a case unless we believe that it is true.
I would never put anything up I didn't think was true without I could defend in court.
Yeah.
We always know. We've got recordings, we have emails, we have texts, we have WhatsApp, we have all sorts of things to back our allegations up. So I've never tried. So when I made a kind of smile when I was talking about we've had five, and that's just, you know, this year, it's almost like one a month. Interestingly, a Queen Street law firm's been threatening us, you know, with legal thing.
Yeah.
See, where we do run into the problems, right, because we're representing the worker and we're asking for compensation, what they do is they turn around and say, you're extorting us, right? And so because we're trying to get some work of their money back, they're saying, you are telling lies about us to embarrass us.
Uh-huh.
You're threatening us. You know, it's extortion. We're extorting them to pay money, right? So that's how they run the legal argument against us. So I just say, so I deny it. I say, no, this is about you owe this money. You need to pay it. So we tread, not carefully, because we're always careful, but not especially careful. What we do is always stick to what the issues are.
Yeah.
So we say, you've done this and you owe this money, but this is where they try and sue us, and it'll never work. It'll never work. I'm not going to get what they want us to do is shut up.
Yeah.
You know, and we won't do that. But what was interesting, this case, we're meeting with a Queen Street law firm sort of next week, because then they say, we will sue you, we're not admitting to anything, we haven't done it, et cetera, et cetera. So the worker didn't really care about the money anymore. Mm. You know, she's in China now.
Yes, our listeners might remember we've talked about this case a few times. This is the case of the international.
And so she's there. She just wants justice.
Yeah.
She wants them to be held account. So therefore, they offered some money, small amount of money, just to go away.
Yeah.
You know, but we didn't do anything. But here's some money. You know.
Yeah.
And you say, no. If you said you didn't do it, then you shouldn't pass.
Well, then we would be extorted.
Well, no, exactly. And look, they do this often. We're not admitting to any of this, but we will give you some money. We say, well, look, if you say you didn't do it, you shouldn't pass any money, because that is extortion, right? Now, we don't believe them for a minute, but in this case, and it was funny, we just said, well, then we'll withdraw. But you said that you're, because they said, we are very opposed to exploitation and take it very seriously, and they said, great, let's work together.
Yeah.
You know, your client says that they've been extorted themselves and they didn't do it. We need to get the government agencies involved, get the Immigration New Zealand, get the Labour Inspectors in, get the IRD, get the police, get the money laundering. Let's investigate, because if your client says that he's been extorted, we need to get to the bottom of it, because, you know, and so butter wouldn't melt in our mouth, because, well, let's work together. And let's get the news media involved in this, because if your client has been kind of, his signature's been forced on all these agreements, which this worker has but weren't his, and these emails weren't his, and these texts weren't his, then he's been a result of a scam, of criminal scam. So we need to get to the bottom of it.
How did they respond?
If these workers have been saying they're working there for nothing, and they're not, who's providing these workers, et cetera, right? So therefore, it goes radio site silence, and they go, well, you know. So I said, well, let's work together. Let's have a meeting.
Yep.
So we'll take instructions from a client. So they've come back this week and said, all right, we'll meet. But you say anything about us, we'll sue. And I said, well, how can we? We're working together. And we'll get the agencies involved. So there's more than one way to skin a cat,
sure.
Right? Because I know they did it. They know they did it. But what we're saying is now, okay, we will accept you say you didn't do it, so we need to work with you to find out who did do it.
Mm.
And, of course, they know who bloody did it, so we'll keep people posted on this, because this is kind of like a soap opera in some sense, you know, as they pretend to tell the truth and I'll pretend to believe them. But, you know, we're for justice. So this is a case I feel quite strongly about, because they did use a very big law firm to try and close, but I notice their emails now, they get copied into the partner, so the law firm is taking this a little more serious than they have been up to now. So we'll be turning up to their office next week
and
have an open mind and say, well, let's get the police involved. And
interesting to see how this one plays out.
Yeah. So I'll say, well, you know, let's work together. So I'll keep our listeners up to date with this, Izzy, because it is a new way of approaching a problem.
Yeah.
Instead of them saying, we didn't do it. And we say, oh, great, let's work
interesting
together.
Interesting tactic to
get, yeah, well, we're about justice.
Mm.
So they claim to be for justice. Well, then we can work together.
Right, so that's our opinion and approach to defamation. Well, thanks.
You can't see me just smiling. So, but anyway, but it is it's important work. I'm getting a bit facetious, but this is important work, you know, and the right for workers to tell their story must be absolute.
Yeah.
And this freedom of speech everyone talks about, it's political rights. And political speech, when people have a view on, you know, here's my thing on freedom of speech, is that there's a difference between free speech and hate speech.
Yeah.
Hate speech is clear. You espouse hatred to hurt other people,
mm-hmm.
right? That's clear. There should be no place for that. But honest opinion, the real thing is about telling a story or a narrative or an instance which is informing people of something which is real. And that freedom of speech is always a critical of any free society. I never like the state saying it's what you're allowed to talk about. All change in any society comes through talking and discussion.
Yes.
It's important to have conflict
yes.
of ideas. So conflict's not a bad thing. You have a view, I have a view. It's important to articulate that. Now, when it's a real issue, it becomes uncomfortable. So
yep.
whether it's called about race or about migration or about exploitation, that's uncomfortable discussions for some people. And it's important to have that. They shouldn't be closed down. That's different, see, and that's why it's important to preserve that. Hate speech is about, you know, all people are like this or like that and they shouldn't be here or whatever. Right? That's hate speech. But people, and I think that's the thing, so all civil societies and free societies are created by debate.
Yep.
When you don't allow that debate, then become oppressive, and that's why it's important, this campaign, and to support the free speech. And certainly for workers, what it means if they try and close it down, it means we can never tell these stories and we can never get them justice.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important.
Right, thanks for that, Matt. A lot of food for thought, really interesting discussion points on the show today. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in and sticking around. A lot of conversation happening. As we mentioned a couple of times, if you or anyone you know has a case they need help with or is interested even just learning more about One Union and perhaps becoming a member, we really do encourage that. You can head on over to our website, oneunion.org.nz. That's oneunion.org.nz. There's an easy-to-use case form that you can fill out, but if that doesn't suit, please do feel free to phone us on 0800 368 000. We will always get back to you within 24 hours. So, ka kite.